My guest today is Matthew Renzi. Matthew, how you doing?
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Matthew?
What do I do?
You like Matthew, right?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, I prefer Matthew.
Let's go with that then.
Okay.
What do you do, Matthew?
So I am a data science consultant and a software developer with about 17 years of professional experience now building large-scale data-driven desktop server and cloud-based applications.
Data science?
Mm-hmm.
What is data science? I hear that a lot more in the last 2 years than I ever did in my life.
So data science is an interdisciplinary field composed of math and statistics, domain expertise, and computer programming that its purpose or its goal is to essentially derive insight or actionable insight from raw data in some way, shape, or form. So essentially this idea of taking a data set, maybe running an experiment to collect data, transform the data, and then convert it into or analyze the data to convert it into something you can make a rational decision with.
Okay, that sounds very useful.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this: if I'm just an average Joe developer, maybe let's say full stack developer,
yep.
I do web front end, SQL Server back end, or any database back end,
yep.
some middleware. Should I be learning data science? Is this important to me?
I believe so. In fact, I've kind of I'm betting my career on it right now, which is why I'm focusing on trying to teach.
Is that where you came from?
Yes. So I have a background in software development as well as machine learning and artificial intelligence through my computer science degree.
Okay.
So I believe it's really important for software developers to understand data science because not only can you apply it directly to the work that you're doing, but the software that you're going to be building in the next kind of generation of software is essentially going to be largely data science focused, I believe, or at least I predict. The way you use this directly in your job is, for example, software developers, we're typically working with data sets of all kinds. I mean, we're looking at log files to analyze them for like certain performance things.
Sure.
We look at our code to analyze them for code quality via code metrics or static code analysis. We also have to convince decision makers on a daily basis that our idea is good or bad. And we also want to be able to test things like features to determine, well, should we work on feature A or feature B? So we can run a little A-B test experiment in order to determine which feature would be best to invest our time in.
That's interesting because when I think of developers and data,
yep.
I think of forms over data, the data that I'm actually maintaining
working with,
in
yep.
most of my...
Yep.
You didn't even mention that. All that
nope.
stuff is really metadata.
Though. So, and that was kind of the second half of where I was going, that the applications you'll actually be building will use data science, things like machine learning, in order to analyze patterns in the data, extract insight, and then make the machines actually make the decisions rather than having a human knowledge worker make those decisions. But the data that I'm talking about, which is the data that's kind of the byproduct of our DevOps pipeline, this idea that, you know, we're pushing software through almost an assembly line nowadays through our continuous integration, continuous deployment processes,
yeah.
and there's massive amounts of data exhaust with each step as we go through this process. So these data that are available through this DevOps pipeline, which we call data exhaust, it's essentially a byproduct of the process, can be analyzed in order to extract useful information to help us improve continuously as software developers.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with that term. So data exhaust is the data that is associated with continuous integration steps? Is that what?
Data exhaust in the more general sense is essentially a byproduct of something you're trying to do.
Okay.
I think the perfect example is Google. So we type some words into a search engine to search for something. That's the primary purpose. But then every time we search for something, there's data that kind of comes off of that as a byproduct, like which of the links did we click on, or how often do we search for this type of term. So for example, Google will use this data exhaust in order to analyze it and create new value streams for that data. For example, determining whether there's going to be an outbreak of a cold or a flu based upon how frequently people are searching for cold and flu terms in a certain geographic region.
I see, okay.
So the same thing with our software development processes. You know, we've got code going through a pipeline so we can look at things like cycle time and analyze like how quickly we're able to get features out to production,
okay.
and then hopefully improve our cycle time over time, since that improves our feedback or the rate at which we can learn how we're advancing with our software.
And this is how you, in your day job, you're mostly using data science.
This is
analyze
what,
that yep. sort of data.
This is what I'm attempting to do. In addition, I create Pluralsight courses as well, so I also do things like try determining which courses are going to be the most valuable for my audience based on feedback. I do A-B tests on the titles of the presentation, so I'm constantly using these data science practices in my own profession as a consultant.
Okay. What sort of trends should we be looking at in data science?
Well, the thing that I think is most interesting right now is this idea of deep learning. So you're familiar with machine learning, I assume.
Yes, okay. And the fact that Azure has a lot of tools
yes,
to make
absolutely.
Machine learning easier.
Yes. Oh, well, actually, I should have known. I was at your talk yesterday, so you're
yeah.
clearly familiar with machine learning. Well, there's a new kind of breed of machine learning that's like the latest set of breakthroughs called deep learning. So
yes.
it's this idea, without going too deep into it, that we are taking these machine learning algorithms and we're stacking them into hierarchical hierarchical networks so that they're actually doing feature extraction at each layer within this hierarchical network. And it essentially models the way we believe the neocortex of the human brain is actually processing information in this kind of hierarchical way. And it's led to a series of breakthroughs in terms of the overall accuracy of machine learning algorithms. In fact, I assume almost all of the stuff that Microsoft is doing for voice recognition, for image recognition, and for video recognition are all being based on these new deep neural networks.
Yeah.
So I think this...
I actually know that is the case.
I think deep neural networks are essentially the future for machine learning, and I think this is also the future for a lot of software that we're going to be building, because essentially we're to a point where software is now not just about doing math and like filling out forms and collecting data. It's about analyzing data and essentially eliminating the need for a human being to make a decision in a specific loop somewhere between collecting data, analyzing the data, and then normally we'd have a human make the decision to effect a change in the real world. We're just going to cut out the middleman and have the machines actually affect that change, then analyze the effect that it's had, whether it was positive or negative, and then reinforce over time, or essentially that feedback will help the machine improve over time so it can optimize. And this leads us to things like autonomous vehicles, smart cities, smart buildings, all of these things where...
Terminator.
Potentially. And that's the interesting thing is that we're going to have a series of ethical questions that we're really going to have to ask in the future as to whether these things are going in the right direction or if we're using them for the wrong reasons.
Interesting. What you're saying, it actually sounds hard. Is it for the average Joe?
So I think there's two or maybe three answers to this question. The first is if you have the intention of building your own machine learning models, it can be hard because you have to have a relatively deep understanding of statistics, especially if you're building the machine algorithms from the ground up. However, most of these algorithms have already been built, and there's good practices or established practices like using ROC curves and stuff like that to determine the accuracy.
ROC is what?
Receiver operator characteristics, I believe. It's an older term, but essentially, we use it, the curve, in order to determine the effectiveness of a machine learning algorithm. So we've got a series of practices in place that essentially eliminate the need to have a deep understanding of the statistics behind it. However, that can potentially get you in trouble if you, it's kind of like not understanding how a sorting algorithm works.
Okay.
Most developers can just go in there and use any old sorting algorithm.
Yeah, something dot sort, and it works.
But
it just works.
In some cases, you're like, oh, well, this is not computationally tractable because it's efficient because you're using a bubble sort instead of a quick sort or something like that. So I think the same thing is the case in machine learning. Essentially, if you're building algorithms, you have to have a deep knowledge. If you're just using the algorithms, you don't have to have as deep of knowledge. And then the third option is just to use APIs where everything's already done for you. For example, the Azure Machine Learning. Essentially just simple API calls, and all of the difficult work has already been done for you on the back end, so essentially you just get your answer back from the machine.
Oh, you're talking about like cognitive services?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Azure Machine Learning
is
you do have to, I think, some understanding to use ML Studio.
Yep, and in fact, that would probably be the perfect metaphor. So the first thing that I'm talking about is if someone were to build their own machine learning models, the second step would be using Azure Machine Learning, and the third would just be using cognitive services.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sort of like software as a service, platform as a service.
And, absolutely.
I guess we didn't get onto IaaS in that case, but still, those levels of abstraction and complexity and control, those trade-offs are happening there.
Yeah.
It's a lot to learn. The more you want to kind of go down that stack of more control and more complexity, if I'm a good developer, where do I go to get started learning this stuff?
I think there's a lot of good sources of information.
You went to college for this, right?
Yes. So
that seems overkill. If you've been to career, I'm not going to go back and get a four-year degree in artificial intelligence.
So, yeah, for what I do specifically, a lot of the information I learned in college I don't actually use. And it's mostly because we've already solved these problems, and so I'm just using algorithms that someone else wrote.
I see.
Like,
okay.
When I was in college, we were learning how to write the machine learning algorithms and actually learning how to do the math.
Where did you go to college?
Iowa State University.
Oh, okay.
Yep, I have double degrees in computer science and philosophy with a minor in economics.
In Ames, Iowa.
Yep,
just
Ames,
made
Iowa.
My first trip to Iowa ever last month.
Awesome. And so I think we've got, you could go back to college if you want to get deep into this.
Yeah.
We've got courses through companies like Pluralsight. Mm-hmm. Coursera has some really good stuff on data science. And we've got videos, articles, all a slew of information available. But I think what you really need to do to get started with it is to just start playing around with it.
Okay.
And like, once again, cognitive services makes this extremely easy. You can just go out and play around with machine learning algorithms to get started and get kind of familiar with it.
Right.
And then if you're building like enterprise applications, you're probably not going to use cognitive cognitive services, that's where you're going to need something like Azure Machine Learning.
You need more control than that.
Because you've got your company's data set that you're going to need to use a machine learning algorithm to build a model in order to make a prediction or a decision based upon your data, not like image recognition, where Microsoft has used a whole slew of their data in order to, or public data, in order to build a model that you're just using their model.
Okay. All right, and some of your courses are around machine learning, correct?
So I do a series of courses on Pluralsight for data science, and I'm specifically targeting data science for software developers. It's just kind of the area that I'm in. So I have a course on data science with R, which essentially teaches you how to do all of the kind of general data science practices using the statistical programming language R, which is one of those programming languages everyone's heard about, but most people haven't used. And if you're working with data, I highly recommend learning R. It's important to my job as learning SQL, essentially, for data science, because it allows you to slice and dice data in really flexible ways, and it's extremely good at doing things like cleaning up messy data sets in order to get them ready for use for analysis.
Yeah, it seems like R and Python are the two languages for data science.
In almost every survey I've seen, we see SQL being the number one tool that data scientists use, because everybody uses SQL, and then number two and three, almost head-to-head every time, Python and R. And I don't know which of those two languages is going to win out. I see pros and cons to each, but I'm hedging my bets by knowing both, or trying to become an expert in both, so that if one does win out over the other, I'm covered.
Oh, I suspect, like a lot of things, there'll be multiple right answers.
Yes. Tabs versus spaces. It depends.
Oh, well, that one, it's obvious. It's, I'm not going to tell you my
opinion on
that. It depends. Is there anything else we haven't talked about that we should have?
I don't know. I can't think of anything else.
All right. Well, thank you very much,
yes,
Matthew.
Yes, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. My two favorite things about speaking at conferences are that I get to hang out with all of my conference friends and I get to learn about exciting and new technology.